This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
In the main, it is looking to get the economy in Liberia up on its feet again, and with that, he needs help from Western democracies, particularly strong Western democracies with a strong economy. And there he's particularly looking at France.
That's reporter Catherine Field speaking on Liberia's President George Weah's visit to Paris. Details coming up.
Also, witnesses say scores of girls still are missing after a Boko Haram raid on their school in Nigeria's Yobe State. And Kenya today issues a travel advisory for South Sudan, warning its citizens to avoid large parts of the country.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the charity Doctors Without Borders says hundreds of thousands of people displaced in remote areas of Borno State in northeastern Nigeria by the Boko Haram insurgency are totally dependent on external aid for survival. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Doctors Without Borders, also known by its French acronym MSF, describes the living conditions of hundreds of thousands of internally displaced people in Borno State as dire. While the Nigerian military has largely suppressed the Boko Haram insurgency that began in 2009, the crisis continues. François Tillet de Motor is the MSF Emergency Humanitarian Affairs Officer in Switzerland. He says these people are trapped in different enclaves in remote, hard-to-reach areas, some for more than 2 years. He tells VOA they have very little freedom of movement because of security reasons. He says they have little hope of returning home anytime soon and are totally reliant on international aid, which makes them extremely vulnerable.
So they don't have access to land to farm. They have very little access for their cattle to be able to graze outside of the IDP locations. And this is part of the problems that we see, is that they are extremely reliant on assistance and on aid, and they're very, very dependent, which also puts most of them in a very vulnerable situation.
The Boko Haram conflict has displaced 1.7 million people, most in Borno State. Another 200,000 Nigerians have taken refuge in neighboring states. President of MSF Switzerland, Revika Papadopoulou, has just returned from a three-week visit to Borno State. She tells VOA food, safe water, medicine, and other basic needs of the displaced are not being met.
Stepping up the assistance, both by the external or the international assistance, but also from the Nigerian state, in very few locations we have presence of the Nigerian administration. The military is extremely present, but not the rest of the state services.
MSF officials say it is important that the crisis in Borno State is not forgotten. They add, people who have been so cruelly victimized by Boko Haram must not continue to be victimized by national and international neglect. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Witnesses today said scores of girls still are missing after a Boko Haram raid on their school in Nigeria's Yobe State. Hundreds of students and teachers managed to escape the raid in the town of Dapchi Monday night, but anxious relatives say that many are not accounted for. Some relatives say they fear some of the girls may have been kidnapped by the Islamic militants. In 2014, Boko Haram seized more than 200 girls from a school in Chibok, in neighboring Borno State. Many have been freed and have reported that they were forced into sex with their captors. More than 100 girls are still held. Police and state officials say they cannot yet confirm the reports of missing girls in Dapchi, and Yobe education officials say the school is closed for a week and the staff is doing a head count of the students. More than 700 girls attended the boarding school.
Liberia's President George Weah met with students in Paris this morning on his second day in France. WIA is visiting the French capital with hopes of forming partnerships with France in economic and educational growth. He told the students he wants bilateral relations between Liberia and France to be at the same level as those between France and Guinea and France and Ivory Coast. Reporter Catherine Field is covering WIA's visit. She spoke with me about the significance of his trip.
In the main, it is looking to get the economy in Liberia up on its feet again, and with that, he needs help from Western democracies, particularly strong Western democracies with a strong economy. And there he's particularly looking at France. Also, President Weah has said that youth unemployment is a key issue in Liberia. Again, you go back to France for that. President Macron is very much up and on the go about youth unemployment. He's very keen on getting girls back into education, making sure there's a pathway for girls in education. So in lots of ways, you're actually seeing two young presidents coming together, Emmanuel Macron and Georges Weah, coming together. They both, if you like, speak from the same hymn sheet. They know what the countries need to get going, and that is your economic stimulus and education.
Yes, and I understand he really spoke on education this morning.
He did. This is his second day of his visit to France, and he met with some 400 students and various representatives of African associations here in France. And he said, yes, I left school without an education, but I went back to school. I got my master's. And he says, there has to be education. There has to be a real push for education in our country. So he was really, if you like, pushing again about the not just the importance of education, but the importance of investing in education. And in particular, he was talking about, for example, medical facilities. It wasn't much medical training. He said that Liberia really does need that. And he wasn't just talking about higher education at a university level. He was also talking about education from primary school to intermediate school, right up to higher education within the medical sector.
Did President Weah say why he sees France as the country to be a partner with?
What he wants specifically from France is that Liberia gets on the same level of diplomatic and development aid responsibility as other countries in Francophone Africa. In particular, he mentioned Guinea and Côte d'Ivoire. He feels that the time is right because French President Emmanuel Macron is making a new, if you like, not just a push into Anglophone Africa, he's trying to fill that void from where Britain has pulled out. And when you look at it, you can see why President Weah has chosen this moment. President Macron of France has already opened up to Ghana. He's now opening up to Liberia and talking about putting development aid and special diplomatic status to Liberia. And let's not forget that later this year, Emmanuel Macron is planning a visit to Nigeria. So President Weah is using that moment, that very small window, and to get in there and to have an equal status as other countries, particularly Francophone countries that generally are the only ones that France concentrates on.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with me from Paris.
Kenya today issued a travel advisory for South Sudan, warning its citizens to avoid large parts of the country. The advisory applies to parts of the Greater Upper Nile region, Northern Leech State, parts of Maiwat, Eastern Nile, and Ye River State. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs and International Trade recommends that Kenyans living in South Sudan use caution when moving about and avoid the areas listed in the advisory. The announcement comes a day after two Kenyan pilots arrived home after being held by South Sudanese rebels for more than a month. Rebels captured Pius Frank Njoroge and Kennedy Shamala after their plane crash landed in Akobo in the Greater Upper Nile State. A woman and several cattle died in the accident, and the rebels demanded compensation. A rebel spokesman said just over $100,000 was paid.
Political parties in Cameroon have set an ambitious goal ahead of this year's polls to put women in at least 30% of elected offices. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
A An all-female orchestra plays as 300 women selected from associations around Cameroon campaign in markets, universities, and popular spots in the capital, asking women to register to vote. 29-year-old fish seller Clarice Kongyu says she agreed to register because the women convinced her that with hard work, she might even one day be on the ballot.
We can be able to do what a man can do, to be given posts that the world feels as it's only for men. There are women who are mechanic. There are women who are driving caterpillars and all the like. But at first they thought that that was just the job of a man. The problem is that some of the women are not pushed for. They are like sleeping.
Cameroon will be having a series of important elections this year, local, parliamentary, and presidential. Political parties, including the main opposition SDF and the ruling CPDM, have taken public commitments to achieve a UN-established benchmark of at least 30% female representation. The government has echoed the commitment, calling on parties to put forth an adequate number of female candidates. The first election of the year is the senatorial, scheduled for March 25th. To meet the gender goal, women would need to win at least 20 of the 70 senatorial seats up for grabs, while President Paul Biya would have to include women among the 30 senators that the Constitution calls on him to appoint. Observers say the odds of success are long, at least in the short term. Cameroon has 386 mayors. Just 26 are women. In the National Assembly, women occupy one-third of the seats in the lower house, while the upper house is just 20% women. Female members of the ruling CPDM party say women should not be discouraged. Senator Julien Janku of Cameroon's Far North region says many women are not able to participate in decision-making because of traditional misconceptions and early marriage, which derails their education.
On pensait que quand tu es chrétien, tu ne pas faire la politique. On sera chef du cardinal.
She says she did not believe it when men in her community said the Bible prohibits women from participating in politics, and so she went to seek advice from the highest member of the Roman Catholic Church in Cameroon, Cardinal Christian Toumi. She says he told her that politics was for both men and women. But some male politicians argue women aren't ready and that Cameroon needs to get more women to vote before it can get more women in office. Women constitute 52% of the country's population. Yet, according to official figures, women account for just 30% of the 7 million people registered to vote in this year's polls. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib. 18 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Witnesses say scores of girls still are missing after a Boko Haram raid on their school in Nigeria's Yobe State. Kenya Today issued a travel advisory for South Sudan, warning its citizens to avoid large parts of the country. And political parties in Cameroon have set an ambitious goal to put women in at least 30% of elected offices in this year's election. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
In more news around the continent, five South African police officers
and an off-duty soldier were killed today during an attack on a rural police station. A police spokesman says an armed gang stormed the outpost in the southern village of Insobo shortly after midnight local time and killed three of the officers. They stole a cache of weapons and abducted two other police officers as they escaped in a police van. The soldier was shot and killed as the gang fled. The bodies of the two abducted officers were later discovered dumped on the side of a road. Police Minister Fikile Mbalula called the attack a national tragedy. South Africa has one of the highest crime rates in the world.
Politicians in Australia are being accused of racist mischief-making over reports of gangs of young African migrants and refugees running amok in Melbourne. The Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, said the situation was out of control, while community leaders accused him of making inflammatory and inaccurate statements for political gain. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Fights and violent robberies involving young African migrants have prompted a stern response from Australia's Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull.
We are very concerned at the growing gang violence in Victoria, in particular in Melbourne.
In the state of Victoria, the Acting Assistant Police Commissioner Shane Patton said he was worried about escalating rates of crime.
Over December, we've seen a number of separate incidents which have cumulatively given rise to this whole issue of African youth offending. We've had an assault of a police member then occur on Boxing Day in High Point. That was a horrendous assault, to be kicked in the face whilst arresting someone and then to have a group of African youths gather around them.
Jason Wood, a federal MP in Melbourne and a former police officer, says his constituency has been racked by gang violence.
In some suburbs, I know in Clyde and Clyde North, there's been aggravated burglaries in one in 20 homes, which is quite incredible when you think about it. I've had families where African gangs, and we believe it'll be the Sudanese, have come back two or three times and terrorised the one family. The first occasion they kicked the door in at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Official statistics show that 1% of all offenders in Victoria last year were Sudanese-born. This migrant community makes up just 0.01% of the state's total population. And while the Sudanese are overrepresented in the crime figures, the number of offences is small. Zioni Walker and Fender from the African Australian Communities Leadership Forum believe some politicians and the tabloid press are exaggerating the problem of so-called gang violence by young migrants.
We should not be distracted by name-calling, political point scoring, or media sensationalism in trying to sell stories. We finally ask the media to demonstrate more responsible reporting on these difficult issues affecting our community and balance their reporting with the many positive stories that are happening within the African Australian community. A majority of African Australians have great stories to tell about their lives, about the positive contributions they make to Australia.
Stay on your toes. Learn. Stay flat foot. So you have to stay on your toes.
At a gym in Sydney, a basketball club run by a former Sudanese refugee, Mayo Chagai, is helping young Africans stay on the right side of the law.
What happened in Melbourne is not something new, because when I first came to Sydney here in 2006, I straight away heard about horrible thing about us, about migrants being called parasites, sucking their social services, and being called lazy and being called criminals.
15-year-old Sudanese refugee Moniping Moniping says he and his friends are also wrongly accused of being troublemakers.
You see in the media, it says that Sudanese boys are doing bad stuff in Melbourne, robbing people, and then they think every Sudanese boy is the same around here. If you do something small, they make it look like something big. And then we go to the shopping centres and all that, they make it sound like we're going to steal and all that stuff, but we're not even going to steal, we're just going to buy stuff and leave, that's it.
The Sudanese aren't the only group of migrants to have found life tough in Australia. It can take generations to feel accepted. Just ask the Greeks, the Italians and the Vietnamese. They all endured hardships and discrimination when they first arrived, but are now well-established parts of a multicultural country. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The UN Children's Fund reports newborn babies in some of the poorest, most dangerous countries in the world are up to 50 times more likely to die than are newborns in some of the world's richest, safest countries. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA in Geneva.
A survey of 195 countries finds a shocking disparity in the mortality rates of newborn babies in poor and rich countries, and most of those deaths are preventable. On average, it reports 27 deaths out of 1,000 births in poor countries, compared to 3 deaths out of 1,000 in rich countries. While Pakistan is the lowest-ranked country, the survey notes 8 of the 10 most dangerous places to be born are in sub-Saharan Africa. Japan tops the rankings with only 1 newborn death out of 1,111. The UN Children's Fund reports great progress has been made in cutting by half the number of deaths among children under age 5. When it comes to newborns, though, UNICEF official Meg French says the results are deplorable.
There are 2.6 million babies who die every year in their first month of life, and that is equivalent to 7,000 babies every day. And those babies need our attention. It's a tragedy because most of those deaths are preventable.
She says more than 80% of newborn deaths are due to prematurity, complications during births, or infections such as pneumonia and sepsis. This month, UNICEF is launching a global campaign called Every Child Alive, which aims to reduce deaths among newborn babies. French, who heads the campaign, tells VOA there are simple, affordable measures even the poorest countries can take to bring down this unacceptably high death toll.
We know that one of the things that would help babies the most is to be born into a safe pair of hands, so a trained midwife, doctor, or nurse. Initially, you don't need big fancy hospitals. If you can get trained health workers that can get out into communities, that's a really important first step.
French says other proven solutions that can prevent newborn deaths include access to clean water, disinfectants, breastfeeding within the first hour of birth, skin-to-skin contact, and good nutrition. UNICEF is appealing to governments to invest in improving fragile health care systems. It says providing facilities for mothers and newborns with water, soap, and electricity will go a long way toward saving lives. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Skip Sisk, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, South Africa has a new president, Cyril Ramaphosa. He ascended to the top position after the ruling African National Congress ordered the embattled, scandal-plagued Jacob Zuma to step down as president. We will discuss the implications of the ANC's power shift on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
And to AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at UpfrontAfrica.